you can call me Mr. O-Lantern. I'm Jack.
He's back.
Look how scary I could get. Scary as fuck, bitch. I'm lit. All my light I emit. Get closer. Don't run like a bitch. I'm lit. Jack. Jacko, Lantern.
You think anyone in Hiroshima or Nagasaki gives a shit who built the bomb? You didn't drop the bomb. I did. Hiroshima isn't about you.
Don't let that crybaby back in here.
Welcome to A Voyage Through Film. My name is Anthony, a.k.a. Jacko, but you can call me Mr. O-Lantern. I got my baby right here, Joshua.
Joshua. So happy to be here. Thank you, Jacko.
Thanks, Joshua. And I got my doggito, Marquito, here. What up, Marky?
Thank you, Mr. O-Lantern. Doing well. How about you?
Fantastic. Couldn't be more lit. All right. Well, today in A Voyage Through Film, we got Oppenheimer on the docket. Woo!
Oh.
Today we have a special occasion, a special roundup, if you will, of Barbie, Oppenheimer, and the Meg 2.
The Trench.
Oh, yeah.
And remembering William Friedkin.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Now, giving you the lowdown is Joshua. Take it away for me, Joshua.
Thank you so
Oppenheimer.
Much.
Oppenheimer.
Yes. Ah, that feels good. Oppenheimer, 2023, obviously, directed by Christopher Nolan, the man... the towering giant himself. And boy, oh boy, is it a fucking blockbuster. A rated R Nolan film. Which must be noted. Which is not usual. It's not usual for him. But he decided to make an adult dialogue-heavy movie. We got Cillian Murphy in the lead. RDJ. Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah.
Giving a fucking, just crushing it. I didn't even recognize him at first, that makeup.
I didn't recognize him for the first, like, 10 minutes of his part of the movie.
It was crazy. The makeup was great. And that black and white, that black and white film.
Yeah, he looked just like Louis Strauss.
Is that the character he's playing?
Yeah, who the fuck knows who that is, so.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the resemblance. I was like, oh my God, is that... That looks just like Louis Strauss. Wow. Some people in the science community must have thought that. We got Josh Hartnett, which was great. It was great to see Josh Hartnett again in anything. I feel like...
Yeah, right. Yeah.
He was... Yeah, he like left movies for a while, I feel like. But he's great. Benny
Safdie.
The
smartest he's ever looked in a movie, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, what the hell? That was weird to see him. I was like, what the hell? I don't usually see you on this side of the camera.
Who, Benny Safdie?
Yeah. Is anyone, he's one of the Safdie brothers, right?
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
But he is like the one who acts. He was in Licorice Pizza. He was Good Time.
He did look familiar.
Like their movie, yeah. He plays like the brother with like mental problems or I can't remember who else. Kenneth Branagh.
Wait, what? Matt Damon?
Matt Damon fucking steals the show, dude. Matt Damon. Oh my god. Matt Damon.
Yeah. Looks a lot like my dad, Matt Damon.
He's so fucking funny. He does kind of look like your dad. With the mustache.
Yeah. Or like Jake. Yeah.
Ah, it's funny. Oh, he's so good. Gary Oldman. I mean, it's just through and through. Powerhouse, like, stacked cast. Yeah. Casey Affleck.
Yeah, Emily Blunt.
Emily Blunt.
Florence Pugh.
Florence Pugh.
And then everybody else is just like basically a cameo at this point.
Yeah.
All the other stars are just like playing cameos.
We got that one guy from Dark Knight who's like one of Joker's minions.
Dane DeHaan?
I don't think it's Dane DeHaan. Though, was Dane DeHaan in it? He was in it, wasn't he? Yeah, he was great in it.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, he was like the guy who was like trying to set him up. They
yeah,
both
like
were.
The antagonist Dane... the whole time.
Yeah, at the Manhattan Project. Yeah.
You're talking about the guy that's like the crazy guy that is at the parade that shoots Gary Oldman?
No.
Yeah, that's who I was talking about, but that's not Dane DeHaan. He has a different name that I can't remember.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
No, Dane DeHaan is he played Harry Osborn in The Amazing Spider-Man, and he was in like Chronicle. Remember Chronicle?
The superhero movie.
The superhero movie, like through the phones and stuff.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. I don't know. He's been in a bunch of stuff. He's really good. Yeah. A bunch of other fucking actors. And Hoyt Van Hoytema behind the camera. Of course, doing fucking crushing it. IMAX film. It's insane. It's all shot on film. Black and white film. Black and white IMAX film for the first time was shot for this movie. Just so fucking dope.
Nice.
He's so committed to the big format, even with a character drama. He makes it a huge, the biggest canvas he can. And it feels so epic. It's like the most epic character drama ever. It's like a...
Oh, yeah.
It has the pacing of an action movie, but it's like... Or like a spy thriller or something like that. But it's like... just about a scientist making a bomb, which I guess technically kind of is like a spy thriller kind of thing.
At least through the first 2 hours, I'd say it keeps a good pace. The last hour, it kind of dragged for me.
Did it with the courtroom stuff?
Yeah, a little bit.
Litigation? Yeah. It didn't drag for me that part. Litigation. It was enough. Yeah. I felt like they kept enough of a pace there.
The litigation on top of the litigation.
Lost one of the storylines. So it just like kind of got like a third slower.
Right. Yeah, I would agree with that too. It does slow down a little bit there at the end, but it's just so epic and you got to know what happens.
Yeah, I feel like I'll appreciate it more on future viewings. That section of the movie. Just like I was like kind of like looking forward to, I don't know, like this, like I thought the climax of the movie would be the bomb, and it kind of is. And then just once the bomb tests are done, is yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it's just the courtroom stuff.
Right.
Which is still some interesting stuff there, but you finally get Emily Blunt finally gets a good moment.
Well, then that's when you realize that like Robert Downey Jr. is like
villainous
as fuck.
Yeah.
Which they don't really like. You're not really sure of that until that part in the end, and then it kind of turns, and you're like,
completely.
"Oh shit!" It's a twist, yeah. And you're like, "Oh fuck!" Like this guy, is just out to fucking get Oppenheimer because he like humiliated him and shit. So I thought that was great how that took over and the black and white stuff took over, and then he does the classic Nolan ending of, like, where you see the same scene from the beginning. But now you see it from like a different perspective, or like you actually see what they said with him and Einstein.
Yeah, and Einstein at the bottom.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I kind of called that too. I kind of saw that coming.
You're the man who gave them the power to destroy themselves.
But like when he says like we thought when we set this bomb off it might be the end of the world. Mm-hmm. I think it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that coming from a mile away.
Oh, really?
You knew that they were gonna say those lines?
Pretty much, yeah.
Saw that coming.
Like, yeah.
All right, yeah. So
I basically when I was in the movie theater, like mouthing the lines with it in my first viewing.
It'd be the hardest movie to like guess the dialogue. I feel like it's all like
no, seriously. I don't know that part. I like I knew that was gonna be the end result. Was that? I mean, that's how he's gonna feel.
Oppenheimer is at like attending school to like for like science stuff, and he's like already a genius. Right, and he tries to like poison his teacher and stuff, and then he goes to a school to go and study like or like teach quantum stuff, which like no one is doing yet, and that's where like Josh Hartnett is, and they're developing all this like stuff and working on shit together, and he has like all these revelations there about like quantum theory and about like what's possible. Because he's sticking to like all this theory, and then it goes into
also
like,
about communism,
right? Yeah, because he's also like part of the Communist Party, and he has this like radical communist lover, played by Florence Pugh, and they're like,
yeah, don't bring me flowers.
Yeah, and she's like a fucking bitch, but for some reason he's like in love with her, but she's because she's like really I don't know. She's like super damaged, I guess. It's super sad, actually.
Yeah, it felt like that, yeah.
But and so he starts like a relationship with her, but it's just like a sex, like love affair. And then at the same time, we're getting future Oppenheimer after Manhattan Projects, and it's RDJ, and it's really his perspective, is Robert Downey Jr.'s character's perspective.
The black
Strauss.
And white.
Yeah, which is black and white. So black and white is future from the most of the narrative, at least in the first half, which is like present or like just kind of following his life. But it does jump back into the past as well, like back and forth. Because then it goes from there to the Manhattan Project because he gets recruited by Matt Damon. And so then it becomes like I would say the meat of the movie, you know, the center of it. Is him working in the Manhattan Project, recruiting the team
mostly
of
him
scientists,
like dropping marbles into jars.
That's the whole thing. And they do the guessing part. Remember, they're like, "How many marbles?" And we get to drop it.
Yeah.
We'll drop the bomb if someone guesses it right.
Yeah,
and that's when Benny Safdie comes in because he's like that Russian guy, and he's like, "Oh, you know nothing about this. Is boring. It's boring." And they start developing shit and realizing that they can, like, make the bomb or whatever. Or he comes in the school, I think, too. And then he follows and he ends up coming to the Manhattan Project with him. And then it's them making the bomb and Matt Damon just takes over, bro. Once Matt Damon comes in, he fucking takes over the movie with much needed comedy, I would say.
Yeah, right? He is kind of comedic, even though he's, like, the boss. Like, he's the one, like, there to sent to like whip all these scientists like into shape, like get them in line,
and then
well, started from scratch. Specifically started from scratch, and then Oppenheimer just is like, yeah, well, you basically came to the right motherfucking boy, so I'm gonna set this whole thing up with you with my entire plan from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
Like that was insane.
Yeah, that was sick. And Oppenheimer is Jewish also, and so he has another personal reason for wanting to, you know, kill Hitler and like, you know, make a difference in that way, and feels like he should and he can, and there's a lot of moral questioning, and like he's going through a lot in his head. We get amazing like trippy visuals of like lights and like quantum like atoms and stuff where he's like imagining shit. He's like The sound design is off the charts. Well, anyway, and then it goes to he's getting like a deposition, like in, like right after the Manhattan Project, because they think that he was like giving out secrets to like the Communist Party. And so that becomes a whole plot line about him like getting framed for that, while at the same time we're seeing the future stuff in black and white, which is about after the Manhattan Project, he was working on the hydrogen bomb. And that's when RDJ was accusing him of a bunch of random shit. Or they were trying to accuse him of the communist stuff again, right? And then
Because he didn't agree with them continuing with the hydrogen bomb.
Exactly, because he like felt exactly. He felt so much guilt from what they had created. Right. That he was like, no, we shouldn't do a bigger bomb. Like, we don't do that. Yeah, we don't. And because of that, because he was lobbying so hard against it, RDJ, who he had also humiliated years before, which was all just to prevent them from the hydrogen bomb agenda. That's all Oppenheimer was trying to do. And he was trying to use his power and influence to prevent that from happening. But then ends up getting targeted by RDJ, so it becomes a whole like courtroom thing. But then that we find out like RDJ gets like fucked by that, basically. Like all the truth comes out. I forgot exactly how it happens. But it's not even technically a courtroom. It's like a what's it called?
Even now. It's a private
hearing.
It's like
a fucking closet.
It's like a
private hearing.
Oh well, there's that one too. There's the one that happens like in the Manhattan Project camp. And then there's the one in black and white, which is like bigger. And
basically, Oppenheimer gets his fucking like security clearance stripped, and basically he has no more influence on the government, which is the biggest. That's the biggest thing. It's like a spit in the face after all that.
After all of that, and there was a thing that's set up earlier in the movie with him and Einstein, where he like talks to Einstein and he says something and then Einstein walks away and he's super pissed. And RDJ is like, I don't know what you said to him, but like, he must've said something that like made him mad at me or something like that. And it was like, and then you find out that no, it had nothing to do with RDJ. He was pissed because they were just like, the world is over. Basically. And he was like, you're the man who gave them the power to destroy the world. And he's like, I know, or something like that. He says something cold, and Einstein's just like, he's pissed, and he just walks away. And it, which I feel like is a classic Nolan ending, where like he's repeating these scenes, but you see him from like another perspective or whatever. It's kind of like the end of Dark Knight with Michael Caine. He's like, sometimes I imagine myself out in a cafe somewhere, and I see you, and you're sitting there. You know what I mean? And then in the end, that happens, and he's like, and he sees Bruce, and he's like, and it's like, chum, 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 chum. You know?
Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
Yeah, but going back, like, earlier in the movie, like, when Florence Pugh, and there's quite a few interesting things with Florence Pugh in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
The first one is when she like pulls the book off the shelf and shows it to him, and she starts riding him again, and she's like, "Read that!"
Oh my god, that was great.
The famous line,
dude, that was so good. I was like, "Let's go, Nolan, with the hard R, with the hard R, baby." Nolan's like, "Fuck it, I don't think Nolan's ever shot a sex scene. I've never seen a sex scene in a Nolan film. I don't think so."
There's just no way that is how that went in reality.
Is that what got you hung up about
that specific one? Sure.
What didn't happen in reality?
That's not like where he decided to like make that a quote of him, like the "I have become deaf." Like, I don't think that's the origins of that.
Oh, who knows? Who knows, dude? I don't know. Oppenheimer.
Yeah, but then later you see her riding Cillian Murphy in the fucking like courtroom, like in, right in front of Emily Blunt.
Oh, oh, that was that sick. Is so good. Yeah, there's so much surrealism. There's a lot of surrealism actually in this movie, which is so good. Like, and yeah, that part was so good. I was like, let's go.
Yeah, that was
this
great.
Is wild. Yes. So trippy. I was like,
but I
David
love all
Lynch
the shit
dude.
In his head too. Yeah, all the like little the... like micro explosions and like I don't know, space stuff or whatever in his head.
Yeah, it's like space or like subatomic particles and explosions and shit. All practically done.
Yeah.
All these like dope
light
effects.
Yeah, that was really cool.
And the way it's edited. Nolan with the super tight editing. He's got like the, you know, everything's just like.
It was like he didn't edit it himself, I guess. He like had someone edit it for him. It was the first time he had used him.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that was kind of interesting. That was the first time.
The first time he worked with that editor? Does he usually edit his own movies?
Yeah. I don't know.
I feel like he probably works with an editor. His movies are so big. So much shit going on. So many edits in that movie.
Yeah, that was probably like six to eight hours of footage for that fucking movie.
Oh my god.
There's probably so many quotes we didn't hear.
Oh, so good. Yeah, that whole the whole part with Florence Pugh and that whole stuff is pretty dope. The whole communist stuff in the beginning, I don't know. Maybe he could have cut a little bit of that stuff. Him and the other family and stuff, and then they have the baby.
The only thing I think he could have kept, like, cut off was, yeah, him and that family, that guy that was, like, watching his child, you know, for a little bit there. Like, I just felt like that whole storyline was, like, you could have cut that in half and then just explained that they had to give the child to a family, to another family.
Because then they tried to bring it back where he, like, tempted him with, like, a communist offer. He's like, maybe you can help us out.
And yeah,
like,
exactly.
Oh, shit,
yeah.
Is Oppenheimer gonna do it? Is he gonna like fucking, you know, give out bomb secrets to Russia?
Yeah.
But no, he doesn't. So it's like it doesn't really. I don't know. There's a little too much there in the beginning that I thought.
Yeah, and I kind of just didn't care about that guy, that character, that actor. I didn't really give a shit about, to be honest, either. Like for some reason.
Yeah. Right.
Like, right away.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. He wasn't that interesting of a character or actor.
Yeah.
But then,
But
when it gets to the Manhattan Project, that's the best part. And Benny Safdie.
Yeah, that's the best part.
Like, you'll never tickle the blah, 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 blah. Kind of a ridiculous accent, but it works. And Matt Damon, he's like, why? Why would we do this? How? Because it's the most fucking important thing in the fucking world. It's like fucking pissed. Ah, oh, he's so good. And he's like, you're a piece of shit. You're an asshole. You're a fucking womanizer. You're a fucking piece of shit. We still want to hire you.
Yeah. Like, awesome. 2 hours into this movie, though, I was like 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
And then the last hour of it brought it down a little bit for me.
No way.
To like a 9.
No way. To a 9?
Yeah. Yeah, to a 9.
Yeah. Yeah, it goes by so fucking fast. I love the pacing of it. Well, it's because it's all the storylines happening at once. And of course, like, kind of weave in and out. I mean, that's the best way to do that. I feel like. If it was linear, it just would not have hit the same.
No, but definitely.
Since you're
not
able to tie everything together, yeah, and like,
I mean, it's got to be like favorite for like best picture, best director, best actor. I feel like actor is gonna be between Cillian Murphy, Leonardo DiCaprio for Killers of the Flower Moon, and Joaquin Phoenix for Napoleon. I think it's gonna be like a 3-horse race.
Wow. You're calling both of those pretty early, though. You haven't even seen any of those.
Yeah. I mean, well, it's not that hard of a call. It's like two, like, the best actors of our generation. And
I would say, yeah, probably.
Two great directors of them.
Probably Leo. Well, We'll see about Napoleon. I don't know. I'm skeptical.
Why? Because they're not speaking French?
One, yes. I wish they were speaking French. But two, I don't know. I don't know. It looks dope. It looks epic. I don't know if it's like... I don't know. I've only seen a trailer, though, so we'll see.
I'm willing to say he's going to be nominated for Best Actor already.
Just based on the trailer to Napoleon.
Yeah.
Wow, that's an early call.
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
You got to shoot your shot.
We'll see. But going back to Oppenheimer, the best part by far is the bomb going off, the test bomb.
Yeah.
When they test it and that whole build up to all of that. And when they're like,
yeah,
they're outside and they have to like face another way, right? And they're like, when you see the
radiation
lights
cream
or something like that, yeah, they're putting a radiation cream. And you know for sure a lot of those guys got radiation. Oh my god.
Yeah, that one guy's like just like, for wait, sure. Is that Billy Safdie that's just like coating his face with like the radiation cream?
Yeah.
And there's a guy in the car next to him. He's like, well, what's that gonna protect you? Or like, what's that gonna do? He's like, what's that windshield gonna do?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. What was that?
They're pretty crazy. Even though they were far, kind of, they weren't really that far. I mean, that definitely had to impact them somewhat.
For sure.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there was plenty of, like, people that tested the bombs. Like, there were just, like, people in the army and stuff that, like, got cancer from radiation poisoning and stuff later on.
Mm-hmm. Had to have.
For sure. Yeah.
My grandpa.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wait, is he Graves?
My grandpa?
No, is he Groves? Like Leslie Groves in the movie? Your grandpa?
Yeah, it's my grandpa.
Holy shit. Is that why you said he looked like your dad? Oh, that all connects.
Yeah.
Dude, oh, I should have caught
I'm
it
always
earlier.
Connecting to everything.
Yeah, that's wow. Crazy, man. That's awesome.
That's yeah, good.
Thanks.
You must have so many stories. I wish we could get to them.
Can't.
Give us one line from like the funniest thing that happened with your grandfather testing those nukes. Like just a funny thing, like a comic relief, because you said he got cancer and died.
Yeah. No, yeah. I think like he could like see the bones in his hand, and then he would act like he was jerking off with his skeleton hand.
Oh, dude, that's so sick.
What? Yeah, thanks.
That's so sick.
That's
crazy.
What?
Radiation must have went right to his penis. Poor guy. Honestly, that was funny until I just realized that's how he got radiation. That's
what? He's jerking off with a skeleton.
If anything's. Yeah, because he could the radiation make it so he could see his hand, his bones.
Okay.
Maybe like
like faking it, just like as a gag.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just like
yeah.
Doing the motion. Wow.
Yeah, just like a joke.
Yeah, like a joke, dude.
Okay. I got it. Must have been a good
joke. If there's
joke.
Anything this movie's not gonna win an award for, it's cinematography though.
What? Not gonna win? Why would you say that?
It looks so good, though.
It's nah, definitely... just to get you fired up.
Oh my god.
It looked great.
Dude, Hoyte van Hoytema, the fucking G, dude. He kind of is a new kid on the block as well. I mean, he really exploded in the last 5 years, but man, he's been shooting. I feel like he's been shooting everything. I mean, after Dunkirk, I guess. He's been doing Nolan stuff. He shot Tenet, right? Dunkirk, Tenet, this one. Then he shot... Did he shoot Dune, too? I think he shot Dune. I think he shot Tinker Tailor Soldier Maybe. Spy back in the day. And that's when nice. I noticed him, Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. Man, it looks so fucking good, dude. The IMAX. You gotta see it in IMAX. You gotta get the full frame.
Yeah.
Anthony didn't get
the
full
frame. Yeah, if you
didn't see
an IMAX, you basically didn't see it.
Yeah. They, like, chopped their heads and stuff.
Oh, wow, he did Nope.
Yeah, he shot Nope. Dude, he's...
That's honestly the best thing about all these movies is kind of the cinematography a little bit.
Anthony was the most hyped to see this, and he only saw 2/3 of it.
Yeah, of seriously. What?
Of the movie.
Of Oppenheimer.
I only saw 2/3 of the movie?
Yeah, because you didn't see it in IMAX.
You're missing a whole third.
Oh, no. That's... Dude, I saw... It looks so good in 70mm, though. It looks so good. It's honestly a movie that didn't need an IMAX camera, even though he did shoot it on an IMAX camera.
It was, like, there's different aspect ratios, though. Like, what does that mean that it's all on IMAX if it's all different aspect ratios and shit? I thought that meant that it was, like, all, like, that IMAX ratio.
Yeah, I know, right? But he still does play with the ratios, I think, just for different shots. And I think probably some shots he does shoot on just, like, normal 65. But it looked like, dude, it looked like most or a lot of it, or everything, was IMAX cameras. I mean, I saw production stills Hoyt Van Hoytema with an IMAX camera on his shoulder. It's like a giant box, and he's he's doing, like, handheld shots. He's like, I was just like, what? Yeah.
Well, there's been, they have, like, suits to carry parts of the camera now so they can, like, get them into tighter spaces, right? But, like, why does a camera have to be designed like this? Like, we can just put some of the stuff in this pocket and some of it over here. I just, like, wear the camera. Now it's this big.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure they do stuff like that.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to rig it up and to be, like, mobile on a person. I mean, aside from, like, Steadicam or just putting it on your shoulder or, like, yeah, wearing, like, an easy rig or something like that. There's ways to strip it down, but IMAX cameras are gigantic. There's like kind of no way around it, and you have to fit them in this giant box because they're so fucking loud too, and they're shooting all this like sound. He gets all his sound on set too. I was reading, he was like, I don't fuck with ADR, and that's why people are like talk shit and they're like, oh, I can't hear the dialogue. He's like, I don't do dialogue replacement, like we got all that on set. And, like, sometimes it's just,
nice.
It just does, you can't really hear it, but it's more, like, it's just better. It just sounds more realistic. It's more in the scene.
Yeah, that's cool.
Which is dope. You know, his commitment to the fucking, just old school craft. Is so dope. All practical effects.
Oh, yeah.
All film. It doesn't even do ADR. Fucking, you know, no CG.
Nice, yeah.
Oh, so sick. No green screens. He was like, why the fuck would you shoot something on a green screen? That's not fun at all. It's like, what the fuck? Like, I'm just going to go build it. Like, whatever we want to do, I'll just go fucking build it. That's fucking fun.
And for this movie, it kind of is great. Like, the plot of this movie, like, it takes place in, like, the middle of nowhere, basically on a built set in the mountains. It's like, oh, great. Let's go find like an affordable place to shoot this in a beautiful scenery that looks like New Mexico or maybe in New Mexico. I don't know where they actually shot it.
Probably somewhere in the desert. Yeah. In New Mexico. Yeah.
Just build the fucking set real quick. We got to build the set anyways. I mean, it's so perfect.
Dude, actually, they had the same production designer as There Will Be Blood. So
I could see that.
Wow.
Which that specifically he wanted to work with because she fucking literally built, a city in the desert for There Will Be Blood. And so...
Yeah, she just built all these abandoned cities all over the deserts.
Exactly. That's her thing. You want a desert city? And then, dude, the score. Ludvig Göransson. Well, actually, I have a correction. Hoyt Van Hoytema did not shoot Dune. But when I noticed him, it was her. For Spike Jonze.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Because the cinematography for that was stupid. And then I realized he shot Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, which is amazing. And then he started shooting Nolan stuff with Interstellar.
Nice. Okay.
Interstellar, Dunkirk. He shot Ad Astra, Tenet, Nope, Spectre. Yeah, he's fucking.
We've gotten all these memes from Interstellar where he's crying, watching the monitor.
Classic.
Yeah.
Thank Hoyt Van Hoytema for that.
Thanks, Hoyta.
Yeah, it's so sick. Ludwig Göransson's score is so good. There's no drums, apparently, in the whole score.
It's all strings.
It's all, like, strings and synths and textures and things.
Okay.
Which I thought was interesting. You would expect there to be some drums to, like...
Well, as a, yeah, you as a drummer, of course you'd think that were the drums.
Right, I'm. Yeah, that's what I always think. I'm like, where are the drums? Anytime I listen to anything, I'm always like, okay, where are the drums?
Okay, drum time. Yeah. And drums come in now.
I'm like, hey, and drums. No? No, but... No, I loved it. I love that there are no drums. I feel like he didn't want to make it too, like, militaristic. You know?
Yeah.
He wanted to keep it more about Oppenheimer, not about, like, U.S. military. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So he was like, no drums. No drums, no fireworks, none of that kind of percussion, which I thought was just brilliant. It's so good.
Well, it's actually just all a build-up to when they're in the fucking gymnasium stomping their feet. That's like, it's all a build-up for that. That's your percussion right there.
Yes.
That's all the percussion you actually
need. Oh, we got to talk about that scene. That's the next best scene. It's after they drop the bomb.
For sure.
Which we don't even see, which I love, too. Keep it on Oppenheimer's perspective.
Yeah, it's just still images of, like, gray and, like, black and white smoke and, like, fucking trees and, like, random, like, debris, like, but, like, all done in, like, a, like, kind of artistic and, like, craft, like arts and crafts type of way, it felt like. Almost, like, not like he was actually shooting these shots. Yeah.
Exactly. And then you just see, like, him, they were fabricated. Torn.
Yeah.
And he goes to that rally where they're like, yeah. And he starts seeing people all fucked up and, like, bloodied as if they had gotten exploded.
Like, that woman who had her face, like, peeling off, I guess that was Christopher Nolan's daughter.
Nice. Oh, my God. Nice cameo. Really? I want to watch it again just for that.
Yeah.
That's awesome. He's like, I've got a role for you, honey. She's like, oh, thank you, Dad. I'd love to be in your film. He's like, yeah, we're going to slap you in makeup. It's going to take 4 hours. And you're going to look like a fucking zombie. No, that's sick, though. That was the next scene where I was like, is this David Lynch? Like, this is dope. This is, like, Nolan surrealism. Which, of course, I mean, the guy made Inception. He's a mind fucker. But yeah, that scene was so good. And then it kind of, after that, it goes into courtroom stuff with RDJ, which is pretty fucking gripping, though, because you really want to know what happened to this guy. I mean, I didn't know any of that stuff about Oppenheimer. I had a general idea about the guy, but I didn't know, like, any of that shit.
And so I didn't know about him being framed and backstabbed. Yeah, no, no clue.
Dude, not at all. And there's so many sick shots, man. Him coming out of the courtroom, putting the hat on and shit. And also, Cillian Murphy's eyes. Can we just give it a second for that?
Yeah.
Holy shit. Wow.
Yeah, I thought it was crazy. Like,
those Rami, eyes.
What is Rami Malek?
Rami Malek shows up. Yeah.
Yeah, just for like a minute, just to be like, nah, I think the Oppenheimer was right.
Yeah, exactly.
He does. That's right. He does come in.
And he's like, nothing that I saw was wrong.
Both of those actors, though, Murphy and what's the guy's name again? Rami Malek. Both of those
Academy
guys,
Award winning actors.
They do 90% of their acting in their eyes. I talked about it right after Oppenheimer. I was like, 90% of Murphy's acting is definitely in his eyes.
Yeah.
He's just like, brilliant. He's just talking fully with his eyes. He'll just sit there and not say a fucking word and just look like he always. The thing about him is that you still see a little bit of like the actor's real swag in Oppenheimer. So like, it makes me feel like Oppenheimer must have been that cool. Like, he's just so cool naturally, you know?
Oh my God.
I thought it was probably like his best performance that I can recall.
For sure.
That's definitely like yeah, I feel like he'll be remembered for this one.
For sure.
This one in Red Eye.
Yeah, and Sunshine.
Sunshine. I love Sunshine. Sunshine's so good.
Yeah.
Yeah, Cillian Murphy fucking kills it. Cillian Murphy kills it. He's so good. So fucking good. And yeah. I mean, the camera is just
Emily
right
Blunt
on.
Though. Come on, Emily, let's not
Emily
let's
Blunt
not live
gets
with it.
Shit on the whole fucking movie.
Yeah, but she kills it though.
For 1 second. Christopher Nolan writes these weak women parts in all of his movies.
No.
You think
really?
So?
Yes. Yep.
You thought Emily Blunt's character was weak?
Yeah. She's just like she's just forced to be a house mom and becomes an alcoholic.
Yeah.
And then she has like one redeeming moment when she like stands up for her husband, and then she gets applauded by an old white man.
Really, this really went deep.
That, I mean, I guess so. I guess when you break it down like that.
Yeah. But they did end on a high note for her character, for sure, though. Because she did kind of steal it at the end. Because you thought of her as incapable, but she was very capable, and she held herself together. And she, like, it felt like she kind of knew what he could have been doing to not seem like such a punk ass in front of them as they're obviously stripping away his ranking and his title and everything, his merit.
Yeah.
Like, they could have, you know, like, she's like basically like, you're just going to let them bully you and piss on you in the corner? Or are you going to, like, stand up for yourself a little bit because
right.
like, this is bullshit. And you shook his hand. Are you a pussy? Like, what's going on? Like, why are you shaking his hand? And then they show that scene where the guy that actually builds the hydrogen bomb, he like goes to shake Oppenheimer's hand. Oppenheimer shakes his hand still. And then he goes to shake his wife's hand. And his wife just like, just straight mean mugs him. Like, doesn't give a fuck. Like, fuck off. You're a piece of shit.
That's right. Yeah. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And no, then her consoling her husband after she realizes that he cheated on her in the hotel room, and then the woman that he cheated on her with killed herself, and she's like, she's like, you don't have, yeah, I feel that way. You don't, right?
Hmm?
Well, they imply that she was like killed.
Did you catch that, Josh? Killed? Did you catch that? You think she killed or suicide? I didn't look up the history of
it. I guess they did it like kind of ambiguous, but it looked like it was suicide, I thought.
It
but
did.
I guess
but
he like kept it she ambiguous. Was like,
well, wasn't she like drowning herself, and then you see someone's feet like step into frame like they're drowning her?
Oh, really? I don't remember.
I thought so. I thought I remember that. Maybe
I remember somebody's hand. I remember like a hand. It looked like a dark like zombie hand. I don't know if that was just supposed to be death. Like
that
a little
like
trippy
a surreal
shot of like death pushing its head down. Yeah.
I thought it was like back then, like the government, if they found out you're a communist, they would just like kill you sometimes.
They would just execute you.
I guess maybe that's why he did it that way. Yeah.
Maybe her death was kind of ambiguous at the time. I don't know. It seemed like suicide, though. It seemed like she drowned herself, which I guess is a weird way to go, too. You don't generally drown
in a bathtub, right? Like it's kind of like hard to do that.
That's like impossible to do, basically.
Right? I think just they like to say that, like yeah,
yeah.
Like I think he says it at some point. Like yeah, she drowned herself in a bathtub. Yeah, like no, she didn't.
No,
but
she,
that's like what is in like the reports.
Got you. Yeah, that was interesting. I like how he keeps some things ambiguous like that. And he just keeps it moving. You know, he's not going to hold on that for too long either.
Yeah.
Or be like, let's investigate her death. It's like, oh, all right, move on. And then, yeah. Yeah, so good. I wanted more Einstein. I think.
Well, I guess some of those Einstein conversations were with other people.
Okay.
And he already stretched the Einstein thing, I think, as far as he really could. Like, he already added extra Einstein.
Yeah, more Einstein. Because he did imply in the movie they didn't really have that close of a relationship at all.
Yeah.
Right.
They were just
right.
familiar.
And Einstein didn't really do anything with the Manhattan Projects. He just kind of, like, set it up.
Yeah.
In a way. Right. For some reason, in my head, I thought Oppenheimer and Einstein were buddies. But I guess they weren't. And I feel like they showed Einstein in the trailer too. And I was like, let's go, Einstein. The goat. You know?
Just waiting the whole movie just to see Einstein.
The movie's called Oppenheimer, and I just want to see little Einstein scenes. It's like, no, the movie's about Oppenheimer. No one knows about Oppenheimer. I'm like, Einstein! Woo! I think the last thing I want to say about Oppenheimer is Nolan's ability to make it like feel like an action movie and like fast-paced, but it's like character drama and like a 3-hour rated R adult film. Summer at the same time, it's a summer blockbuster that feels like a giant spy thriller, but it's a character drama for adults. And it's just his ability to do that. I don't think anyone else working right now can do that. And just like, it's so amazing to see his films like on a giant screen, because you know that's exactly how he's making them for and using that canvas as much as he can. And it's just like, what a fucking filmmaker. What a ballsy and dope filmmaker to be able to like pull that off. And so, yeah, this is amazing. Yeah. I mean, 10 out of 10, I don't know. Huge thumbs up for me. It's probably his best movie, I would say. I don't know. I mean, oh, wow. This and Dark Knight. I guess Dark Knight still has a... Yeah, it's hard to beat Dark Knight. But I think... I don't know. Yeah, we're going to have to give it some time. We'll look back on Oppenheimer and be like, wow,
I've seen Dark Knight 10 times. Yeah,
Nolan's opus.
I got to see Oppenheimer again.
I just love how he made a dialogue-heavy movie. Not what I expected.
Yeah.
He's such a visual, like, keep-it-moving action guy, and he's just like, I just want to make fucking where the dialogue really carries it. But it's so dope, so hard hitting.
I give this one a thumbs up as well. The only thing I would say, so I agree with the take that for the subject material, I feel like Nolan did better than anybody could, just because, I mean, there was like, they ended it with like basically some a private litigation on someone. Like they were insinuating, they are like, it was actually a trial. It wasn't even a litigation. They weren't suing him. It was like a private trial by committee. That's crazy to end it like that, and it to feel like a 2-hour and 20 minute movie is pretty badass. The only thing I would say is I wish there was a little bit more experimental shots.
There was a lot.
I feel like you could have threw in a little bit more because it looks so good.
I'd take more too.
Yeah,
he did a lot, but that's the only thing I would say. That's how I'll end it. That's the only thing I'd say.
Thumbs up or what?
Of course.
Nice.
Pretty much
thumbs up.
Yeah, I think that it's funny that Christopher Nolan keeps making movies about how hard it is to be a genius.
Yes.
I think it says something about Christopher Nolan.
Absolutely. He is a fucking genius.
I mean,
yeah.
It did drag a little bit for me at the end. Like, I mean, it the first 2 hours were quick enough where it didn't feel like a full 3 hours, really. I guess, but yeah, I felt like it could have been a little bit tighter at the end. I don't know. It did feel like a slowdown, but it's still like a masterpiece level movie. It's still one of like one of Nolan's three best movies. Like I need to see it more before I can like place it properly for me, but yeah, it's definitely a big thumbs up. Cillian Murphy, fucking performance of a lifetime.
Oh my God. What a performance, dude.
I'm gonna fuck that plastic butt, split that Barbie. Wanna see my new killer gang, come and find me. Ken is a rug, got him shook, don't remind me. Dolls with no top, give me top, that's exciting. Oh Barbie, I meant to say, hey Barbie. Robert J, if I use an AK, I would let it spray. Hey Jay, I'm not interested in your kiss or your kids. Who you kidding? I made it, bitch. Ken brought a chariot on his new horse. Me and Ken counterparts, made for each other. Don't blame me, blame the factory. You should know, you make death in a factory. All your talk is just talk. You manufacturing, can I get with you? You were bad for me, and killing millions, that is blasphemy. They may have merged our names together, but you were not meant for me. It's A Barbie. You were not invited to my party. It's A Barbie.
So this movie stars Margot Robbie and Ryan Gosling, directed by Greta Gerwig, and it's about fucking Barbie.
Noah Baumbach.
Nice. Which is crazy. Yeah. And it's about the Mattel toy Barbie and its journey into the real world and back.
Barbie has a great day every day, but Ken only has a great day if Barbie looks at him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a voyage through film. We're going to take you through the highlights and the lowlights of Barbie in 10 seconds.
No, I don't think you need to do
in
all
10
this.
Seconds. No. Don't interrupt me. I'm keeping this in. All right, we're good.
I love this.
We're good. Everybody, we're Thanks good. Everybody, we're good. So we're doing Barbie. We're going to do it in like 10 seconds. Basically, long story short, Barbie wakes up, and Barbie's Barbie, and there's Barbies everywhere, and the Barbies are having a good Barbie time, right? But then Barbie starts second-guessing her surroundings and who she is and what she wants out of life. She starts having ambition, but she is a doll, people. Let's get that straight. One thing straight. Yeah. She is a doll. So just take that with a grain of salt as you continue watching the movie. You are watching a live doll. Anyways, she meets Weird Barbie. Perfect. Weird Barbie tells her she got played with too rough, and she tells her how to go to Barbie, how to get out of Barbie world to the real world. So Barbie takes Ken because Ken forces himself there because he's a stalker and he's really into her, and she's clearly not that into him. And that's pretty much the dynamic the whole movie. And then she goes to the real world, and then the whole time throughout the real world, she starts realizing what humanity is, right? Long story short. And then you meet Will Ferrell, and he's CEO of Barbie. And, he's pretty hilarious, provides a lot of comedic relief here, and is just classic Will Ferrell. It's Will Ferrell being Will Ferrell. So if you like Will Ferrell, come watch this movie for 20 minutes and then watch Elf after.
Yeah, that's the worst part.
And then it ends with them realizing...
That's the worst part of the movie, yeah.
Them realizing their humanity in the world and their love for living and being independent, and there's a little bit of a, you know, there's a little bit of extra political commentary, if you will, throughout the whole movie.
Oh, wow.
And then that's it. It's a great, funny movie. Barbie. Hi, Barbie.
Yeah.
A little bit of political commentary. The last 20 minutes is just them explaining, like, feminism.
No.
But it's so good. I mean, I think it's great. It's the feminist blockbuster we all needed. And didn't know we needed. And didn't know it was coming through Barbie. But what a brilliant screenplay to be able to make it, like, deconstruct it in a way to be, like, a commentary on like feminist rights and like current culture and like
because the Barbie world is basically a
feminist utopia, you know, and then they realize that the real world is patriarchal and not that
everyone's looking at me, they're like, and Ken's like, I know, it's awesome,
that part's so funny. And Ken's like,
men rule the world. And he's like, so you're telling me that men just ride around on horses and rule the world? And
yep.
Basically,
and then he takes over Barbie land.
Yeah, exactly. That's the best part, is when he takes over Barbie land. I
I love that part.
My favorite part of his character is when he's just like, I stopped caring about the patriarchy when I realized it wasn't about horses. I don't know why. That's hilarious. Yeah.
I know. I love that part. I love that. I love how just like naive Ken is. Like he plays it so well. It's so funny.
No, but the Ken battle was my favorite part.
The Ken battle?
Well, they have the battle on the beach, and it turns into like a 30s like musical like snap off.
That's so funny. I know. I love.
Yeah.
I feel like the movie has it very quickly established its own world and world rules to be able to be so bonkers that they could do anything. And
that's I was just having so much fun in that Barbie world.
Mm-hmm.
When they took us to the real world, I was just like, nah, just take me back. And then once we got back, I was like, nice. This is where I want to be, in Barbie land.
Can you clip that whole thing? I want to clip that sentence. You're having so much fun in Barbie world, I want to just be in Barbie land, right? Is that pretty close?
Like, I came here to escape reality. Don't take me into reality.
Yeah.
Take me back to Barbie land.
That's right. But that you should realize- be a clip.
You realize pretty quickly.
Take me back to Barbie land.
You realize pretty quickly when they get to the real world that it's just as ridiculous and cartoonish as Barbie world in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, except just like way more aggressive. There's people like catcalling them and stuff.
Yeah, but that's pretty much it. They get arrested with like no consequence, right? They just keep getting arrested released. Yeah. Like, Will Ferrell and his buddies, they're all like cartoonishly like goofy, like remember the chase sequence through the cubicle?
Yeah.
And they're all like flying around. Remember? They're like, you didn't love that part? Get back in the box.
No,
I did love that part.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of silly. It was super silly, but I think it was supposed to add to like the surrealness and like the fantasy world that is. Like,
it was a bad bad use of Will Ferrell.
Really?
Are you being dead
I love Will Ferrell in that.
4 years.
Dude, like, really? Yeah. You really think so?
No, seriously, dude.
No way.
I did not enjoy him in this movie.
You didn't like Will Ferrell in Barbie?
He was fine.
Yeah, that's what I thought. He was fine. I didn't hate it, though. I thought it was fine.
It's hilarious.
You put it up there with, like, Anchorman? Like, for just the Will Ferrell parts.
No, absolutely not. It's not. He's not the lead. He put it up there with Anchorman. So every time you see Will Ferrell on screen, you're like, not as good as Anchorman. Don't care.
Yeah. And then And then I'm like, is it as good as Old School?
I don't know. Talladega's up there.
I also love the.
I
love the 2001 opening.
Oh, yeah, that was amazing. Yeah, I saw that in the trailer, though.
Yeah, but to see it extended like that was pretty amazing. And with Helen Mirren doing the
voiceover.
I wish I hadn't seen
it in the trailer. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, and little girls could only play with house dolls or like with baby dolls or something like that. And like Barbie was like a thing of like a symbol that like they could be something, you know, like women didn't have to be like house moms and just like play with babies. They could be like career women and like go out and do whatever the fuck they wanted. It's so good.
Yeah.
It's so good how it celebrates.
Margot Robbie's like so perfect for the role too.
Oh my God. Yeah. So she's actually the one who produced it. Yeah, they do.
Oh, nice.
She's the one who reached out to Greta Gerwig and was like, you should write a Barbie movie. I want you. Like, I got the rights to it. My company's going to produce it. You should fucking write it.
But they're trying to do at one point, like, the whole thing, like you don't need to, like, look perfect and, like, be, like, the most attractive person in the world. And then, it's like, note to self, don't hire Margot Robbie.
Yeah.
To be in your movie if you're trying to make this kind of point.
I know, which I thought was kind of stupid joke, but I don't know. I don't know how you guys felt about that joke. That was a little much for me. I was like, all right, guys.
It was a little heavy handed, yeah.
Yeah, that was a little, I was like, have your cake and eat it too. I don't know. It's already so many like meta jokes happening. I was like, I don't know if I needed that one, but
my opinion though is it didn't make it cringy for me. I loved it all the way through.
No. Well, there's way
they could have done a little better though with that.
There's way too much happening aesthetically for me to like say that that's a problem. I feel like it's such a great balance of like there's so much amazing cinematic experience happening, like huge dance numbers, amazing production design, like it's just it's an epic movie with like a huge cinematic canvas, and aesthetically it's like very fucking, you know, there's a great vision behind it. So I'll, you know, if it didn't have that, I would be like, this is okay. Why would you make this? But if it has that and it has a feminist political message, it's like, that's amazing. Why not? Little girls need this. At the end of the day, this is for fucking little girls. Like, let's not.
Although it felt like a very ahead of ourselves adult movie. Here. Yeah, it felt like a very adult movie.
Yeah, what is the age that someone could go to see this?
I don't know. Like, I saw girls, like little girls. Like in families next to me. And I was just like, they're not catching this shit.
They are.
A lot of us is over their heads.
No, they're catching dude.
No,
absolutely.
Some of it. Yeah.
How old are we talking, dude? You don't know how fucking like a smart 6-year old kids are now, bro. Yes, they're tapped in, bro.
I am. Yeah.
They're like social justice warriors when they're like 8 years old. This is like it's not even.
Listen. Bro. Yeah, I'm cool with it. It was just the spelling out for me. But maybe they're spelling it out for little kids. That if I'm gonna go off that angle, like selling it to the younger people that didn't catch it yet.
Exactly. That's why that's a ridiculous complaint to be like, oh, they're spelling it out. It's like, yeah, for fucking kids, man. It's a children's story.
Yeah, I mean, none of that bothered me because, I mean, I like agree with most of that.
So. Right. Exactly. Yeah. And it's an amazing point. It's like we.
It
need
didn't
more
bother
of those.
Me, but I think in the courtroom, I could see where people got like a little turned off. I heard people complaining about it as they were leaving the theater. And
yeah,
I was
but
just
you
like,
saw it in Florida, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There we go.
So.
South Florida. Yeah.
Not here, dude. People were dressed up.
Yeah, same over
people,
here.
Yeah,
same
we
over
saw
here.
A bunch of people in pink here. Yeah.
People were dressed up, right? I was not expecting that. I was like,
I was just like in black. Like,
why was
first off, I didn't expect how everyone had the Barbie pink. I never seen so much Barbie pink in real life.
People were buying that shit for this.
People were like, Amazon-ing
yeah, I know, but holy
shit,
they got it like spot on. All the people I saw had like the Barbie pink.
It's wild. I was like,
Barbie.
I did not get this memo that everyone's dressing. I should have dressed up for Oppenheimer. I mean, that would have been good.
You should have. Some people wore suits. I saw kids going with suits. Yeah.
Come in like an Atom Bomb costume.
Atom Bomb costume. Boom! It's like a huge, like, puffy, like, explosion.
Yeah, like you're a mushroom cloud.
Yeah, I get in the seat. It's like, I like take up three seats.
Yeah. I had to ask a guy to switch seats with me.
Really? Why?
Well, there was shit and piss all over my seat.
Oh.
So you wanted him to sit?
Okay.
In that seat?
All right. Where'd you see that? In Florida?
Hey,
was that in Florida?
No. It wasn't in Florida. It was in Taiwan.
He's like, okay. Yeah, sure. I'll trade with you. The shit and piss seat?
Oh, this seat? That's your seat? Yeah, no problem.
Oh, no, no problem. Oh, I love this. Thanks. I couldn't personally take it, but I could tell that you would want something like that. I could tell that you wouldn't mind. So, yeah, just go ahead and get behind me.
All right. Any last...
I think there's one
Margot
last
Robbie stole it. Last words are Margot Robbie fucking stole that.
I don't know
Margot
if she stole,
stole
it. She was the lead of the movie. I feel like Ryan Gosling stole it.
She was handed it.
No, Ryan Gosling didn't steal it, though, for me. He didn't steal it for me. He didn't steal it for me. No. Margot stole it. Even
the last thing to say is Michael Cera, dude.
She's perfect.
Michael fucking
Cera. She's perfect.
Oh, yeah, Alan.
And Kate McKinnon.
Okay.
Kate McKinnon, McKinnon. She was a little over the top.
The whole fucking thing
Michael
was
Michael Cera,
over the
for
top.
Sure. Michael Cera was like the best, like, he was like the best character outside of
what
Barbie.
Was his character name again? I forgot. He's like that one random,
Alan.
Like, Alan. He's the He's like Ken's friend that never took off. And there's like so many different Kens, like, but only one friend. Alan. Yeah, and he like stands with the women and their like mission. Oh, I love when they have to like gaslight like the guys into like hating each other. So they're yeah. they're like, oh, just like ask him to put on The Godfather. Men love explaining why that's like a great movie.
Oh yeah.
And he's like, you see one of the Kens, he's like, you've never seen The Godfather? Oh, this is like a triumph of 1970s new Hollywood cinema. Francis Ford Coppola's masterpiece. I was like, that is literally, I've done that. That is so on point. And so funny. Yeah,
definitely. That was hilarious.
Like, do not roast The Godfather. Yeah,
and then playing the Matchbox 20 song.
Oh my God.
I wanna push you around. Well, I will. Well, I will.
And they're all around singing it, the same song. It's like 4 hours later, he's still doing it.
Yeah.
I will.
That was great.
I love when he takes over and he's got the furry vest. You know? And he's just.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, this is Ken Town now.
My favorite part of Ken was when he went to go surfing in the very beginning.
When he went to go surfing and he fucking hurt himself.
That didn't land for you?
Nah.
He was waiting so earnestly the whole time for Barbie to pass by. And Barbie passed by and finally noticed him after saying hi to almost everybody else. And he got super excited and want to show off his cool moves. What is the problem with
that? The punchline didn't land. The punchline is him hitting the wave and it's plastic and he launches off of it.
Launches off of there comedically way far in the air. Like higher than plastic would launch you.
Yeah. Nah, okay. Yeah, you're right. It's hilarious.
It was funny.
Very easily swayed here on whether or not this is funny.
We just need to get past it.
Yeah. No, I think that's all I have to say about Barbie. I mean, I loved it aesthetically. I love the dance
nice
numbers.
Thumbs up. Thumbs up.
Thumbs up, baby.
Anthony?
Yeah, my doll thumbs up, baby.
Sit on it.
Nope.
All right.
I'm going to put a new outfit on Barbie, though.
Yeah.
Hold on, I'll be right back. I need to go change her in her room.
No, okay.
I got a dollhouse in my closet. Hold on.
Nice. Sorry, yeah. You got a lot of stuff in that closet.
Yeah,
that's
a lot.
Yeah. That's the closet that you hide in sometimes, right? Here in our studio.
Yeah, that's it.
In our podcast studio.
There's a couple closets. I don't think that's my hiding closet, though.
Right.
Meg 2, The Trench. So a research team encounters multiple threats while exploring the depths of the ocean, including a malevolent mining operation. So this movie stars Jason Statham, and it's directed by Ben Wheatley.
Yes!
It's basically...
Ben Wheatley.
Yeah, Ben Wheatley, our boy, Ben Wheatley.
The fucking goat. Shout out to Ben Wheatley.
Yeah.
Fucking love you, man.
Field in England.
Oh. One of the best, most overlooked, underrated movies.
What, Kill List?
Oh, my God. So fucking good.
Yeah, very cool movies.
Sightseers?
So, yeah. Nice, fucking, hell yeah.
What's that one, the first one that he made? The gangster one? Oh, I can't remember. That's so fucking good. All his shit's so good.
I think we hyped him up.
Piece of shit.
But yeah, so this movie is basically just Jason Statham versus three megalodons and a kraken. That's what you need to know.
And a gang of like terrorists.
Yeah, there's also a mining operation that is, they're trying to get some unobtainium from the bottom of this trench.
Yeah. Which I was like, great subplot in addition to the Meg franchise. Because the first one does not have, like hand-to-hand fighting, really. The first one really is just, like, man versus shark. But this one is man versus shark versus giant
the
octopus
first one...
versus other men. So we see Jason Statham beat the shit out of people in this one, which is fucking great. There's some great
But they're looking for, like, a cure or something in the first one, right?
Yeah, they're looking for I can't even remember. And then they go down, and then they get trapped by the Meg. Then they have to go on a rescue mission, and then the Meg, like, breaches through the, like, super cold layer. So the Meg's, like, on the beach, and then they gotta kill the Meg. And then there's another Meg. But this one, they have a Meg. They have a baby
another
Meg.
And another Meg.
There's another Meg, and there's another Meg, and there's another fucking Meg.
Yeah, they, like, train the Meg in this one to, like, only, like, to not attack the
yeah,
guy.
Yeah, but it's not twice. Working, like, at all.
But he clicks, like, 20 times.
Yeah. And the Meg.
Yeah, it never worked, but the guy says it worked the whole time, like, the whole movie.
Which is, like, the...
That's, I guess, it's, like, his joke.
Oh, my God. That was so good. And you think he gets eaten right there in the beginning. But he's like, huh, everything worked.
And then he just shows up. Like, he's like, oh, hey.
Yeah, he's like, oh, that was fine, right?
It's like, everyone just watched you get smashed into the fucking side of this thing.
And he's like, we're dedicating research for more Megs. And we're, like, going to go into the trench and, like, see what else is down there. And fucking Jason Statham's like, that's a Meg. You can't train a Meg. It's still a Meg, boy.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, just like you can't train like any like wild animals.
No. Also, the opening scene is incredible. It starts 65 million years ago.
It's like Jurassic Park.
Yeah. It just starts with 65 million years ago, and there's a bunch of like raptors or something, and they get attacked by like a T-Rex, and the T-Rex goes to the water, and then the raptors start running out of the water. And the T-Rex, like, grabs him, and he's like, ah, and then a fucking Meg comes out of the water and grabs the T-Rex, and it's just like, boom, yeah, Meg 2. I was like, oh, yes! Fucking Ben Wheatley, dude, giving us the goods, giving us the chomp chomp. And it's PG-13,
so
you know.
What an interesting progression for Ben.
Ah, man. Dude, I'm so happy for him that he got this huge studio movie to do, Jason Statham.
Yeah.
And like, and he kills it, man. He kills it with the sound design, with like the fucking, the whole design of it. All the action sequences, super clean, so well shot, like just well executed, choreography on point, CG super on point, like, and just like kills it with the thrills.
It's obviously like, just like ridiculous.
No, it's super ridiculous, but it's I don't know. He just kills it with like the thrills, the building of tension. Like when you see the Meg like slowly come out of the water and like into the light and like its face is right there. Like he does like a lot of those shots that are so dope. What? And the
right, and then like later in the movie, like the fun island when the sharks are just like going crazy on this resort.
Oh.
There's like that shot from inside the shark. When it's like scooping people up and fucking
chomping. Oh my god,
them.
Dude. When that happened.
That was fucking awesome.
Bro, I freaked the fuck out when that happened. I was like, yes. More of this, please. And you know that must have been a very difficult shot to get. Anthony, are you just watching YouTube videos?
No.
We can hear you. We can hear Joe Rogan. You're watching Joe Rogan while we're on doing our own podcast. Are you fucking kidding me? Are you fucking
me? That's a good transition to, does Anthony have any questions about the Meg too?
Yeah, perfect. All right, so I've never seen the first one. Don't know the second one. I did see the trailer of the second one, so I kind of know what the fuck's going on, all right? There's some motherfucking big ass fishies in the water, and they're hungry.
Megalodons.
And they're pissed.
Extra large.
They're pissed and hungry and old, right? So they want a little something.
Yeah. They haven't eaten in years.
Jason Statham, he's the same character. So fun fact, tell me if this is true or false. Jason Statham is playing the same character from The Transporter in this film. True or false?
True.
Basically, he's a combination of every character he's ever played, plus he's a master diver and like rescuer.
Oh, okay, cool. Got it. Okay, cool.
But
so
also,
he is Transporter, but he learned how to swim. It's like Transporter
exactly.
learned how to swim.
That's precisely
okay, cool,
it.
Cool. That was precisely it. Okay, that's what everybody was wondering. That was actually a number one question from our audience. The second question
that's
I have.
That's an interesting question. I feel like they could have Googled that.
The second question I have is, does Jason Statham die? And followed by, is it hilarious?
No, he doesn't die.
No,
he does kills not all die. These fucking sharks.
Dude, he kills all the sharks, all three?
Fucks him up.
And the Kraken.
Well, does he
the
kill
the Kraken?
The...
just kind of disappears.
Okay, they're going to bring her back.
No, they kill the Kraken.
Oh, do they? Oh, yeah, with the helicopter.
Yeah, yeah, they kill the Kraken. The Kraken was the best part, kind of. Not going to lie. No?
It was a nice side plot. Side
okay,
monster.
Question. Interject real quick. The Does Kraken. The Kraken kill somebody with its tentacles by wrapping its neck up and choking it to death?
Of course.
Not just by choking. It puts them in its beak.
Oh, eats it?
Yeah, you see its beak. It's like it tries to eat Statham, right? It has a beak. It's like, bam, bam,
oh,
bam.
Yeah. It does. It does. But also by like tentacle strangulation. There's quite a bit of that.
The tentacles
coming out. And it's cool because they set it up in the
beginning. Incapacitates you with the strangulation.
That guy dies when they're down. So the movie really sets off when they're down in the trench and they get stuck down there because they find the other guys, the terrorist group, mining or whatever. And they like sabotage them. They're like, we got to kill them. So they get stuck down there and the little girl's with them. And then so they're walking around like 20,000, whatever, 30,000 feet or under the fucking ocean. And in these suits that basically look like alien. And they're just like, we got to make it to like this other like submarine or whatever. And fucking one of the guys goes and just like disappears. And we just see a quick like, the eyes open on like a giant squid or a giant octopus. And this guy disappears and we're like, oh shit, what happened to him? We don't even know. And they kind of keep it mysterious for a while. You're like, oh shit, I think it was that giant octopus thing. I don't even fucking know. And then slowly he starts to come back, you know, the giant octopus. And man, when he comes back in Fun Island, dude, ah, plus the Megs. Plus the terrorist guys are all like trying to fuck him up too, so they have to like fucking beat those guys up too. And that one, the black dude, like learned how to fight. He's like, fuck that, man. I learned how to fight since last time. And he's got like a Desert Eagle, like a fucking 50. You remember that?
Mm.
And he's like, and he's fucking killing it. He's fucking beating the shit out of people. Jason Statham
this was that guy that's like trying to kill him like the whole movie.
Jason Statham on the jet ski with a harpoon with a bomb on it. And that's how he's
Well, he's got a bunch
like,
of those.
Rah! He's like, come on, you fucking Meg. Think you can take me out, do ya, Meg? And also, it has like a James Bond like spy opening. Jason Statham is hiding in a crate. And then he like, gel bombs the crate to like, explode a door out and somehow no one notices, so he like sneaks on to like the boat and starts like taking pictures of like this illegal like mining, and they find him, so he has to fucking fight his way out. It's fucking so dope. And then the way they scoop him up is hilarious. They just like fly a seaplane like super close while he's like in the water, and they just like open the hatch and scoop him up. So he's just, like, in there, like, full of water, like, breathing with, like, the mouth breathing thing. And when they, like, land, he just, like, pops out of the hatch and, like, water spills out. It's so good, dude. There's so many touches like that that was just like, yes.
Yeah, that answers your question, right? Did he die?
Yeah, that answered that question. all the other questions were answered in that response. But there is one bonus question I have for you guys. So this is a quote from the movie. Can you guess that character? We've never seen this before. They're hunting in packs.
What the fuck? Mm. Are these all better just be Jason Statham.
Is that your guess?
They're hunting in packs. It's either Jason Statham or it's the lead science guy. What's his name? I don't know. He's like Middle
Cliff
Eastern.
Curtis?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know his name. Like Pakistani
Cliff
dude.
Curtis.
Maybe.
Yeah, James.
Was that him?
It's James. Yeah, James? But that's not who did it. No, it's Jonas. It's Jason.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
You thought that was James?
I thought maybe, yeah, but no, it makes sense that it was Jonas.
Once it gets to Fun Island, which is like, what, the last 40 yeah. minutes of the movie? It's one big real time. I mean, the whole thing takes place over like two days or something. Yeah, it's just one big set piece that like is just real time. Like, you know, boom, boom, going there, you know. Even with the trench stuff, it's pretty real time. Like, there's not a lot of days pass in the movie. The bulk of it
they're
is
like, we have like 8 hours or something.
Yeah, the bulk of it is like
last question. Is it better than Deep Blue Sea?
Yeah.
Probably not.
Probably not. Definitely okay. better than it. Actually, steals a plot from Deep Blue Sea, which is that they have the captive shark that they're running tests on, and he escapes. So, which it has references to a lot of just like great movies, like Deep Blue Sea, Jaws, obviously, Jurassic Park, Alien. I feel like he was just hitting all the homages. It's pretty on the nose too. It's right. like, oh yeah, that's obvious.
Kind of hard to beat Deep Blue Sea, but I'll give it a watch in 5 years.
All right, deal.
It's hard to beat Deep Blue Sea. Deep Blue Sea's not that great.
Pretty good.
It's okay.
As shark attack movies go, it's come on.
Yeah, as shark attack movies go, it's good. It's probably the best one of the 90s.
Yeah.
All right, so thumbs up.
Thumbs way up for me. Ben Wheatley. Dude.
Nice, yeah. Thumbs
crushed
up.
It. Yeah, I love that movie. So good. Better than Meg 1.
Yeah, definitely interested. Yeah, I thought so too. I'm interested to see what Ben Wheatley does next.
I hope they do Meg 3. And I hope that Ben Wheatley does another weirdo, experimental, surreal, fucking acid trip movie after this.
Yeah, right. That'd be good. All right, and... So to conclude this one, I mean, yeah, sad news. William Friedkin left us. And so I think we want just honor him a bit here. One of the best directors of all time. Some of the most well-known movies.
One of the defining voices of the new Hollywood 1970s. Cinema, I feel like, changed the landscape. Docu-style, the realism. Fucking Exorcist and French Connection.
Yeah.
What else do you say? I mean, that's right there. Those are... He redefined the cop thriller and then redefined the horror. And it's like, we're still catching up to those.
Yeah, fucking Exorcist cruising. Is still, like, one of the best horror movies ever.
Yeah, it's still, like, it's... the granddaddy of horror movies. Like, you don't mess with The Exorcist. It's just a masterpiece.
Yeah.
And it gets better with time, I feel like. Yeah, and The French Connection, dude. Gene Hackman.
Yeah.
Just chasing that
whale. Fortunately, I haven't seen it.
No way. Oh, yeah, we've done this. God, dude. The car chase that they did, like, without permits. They just fucking... I don't think you can get away with this anymore, but apparently they just ran that car through the streets of New York with a camera.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's pretty sketchy.
That's awesome.
Yeah. They put a camera, like, right on the hood or something, or, like, it's like a POV thing, and it's, like, super sketchy. Like, apparently they just did it without permits. It's wild. Yeah. He's, like, chasing, like, a subway train, like, in the car. Really famous car chase. Cruising. Al Pacino. Yeah. Is he gay? Is he not? Is he a killer?
Too.
Oh, man. You gotta see it.
Yeah. To live or die, or to live and die in L.A.
Oh. 80s.
Yeah. Young Willem Dafoe.
So good.
Not laundering. Counterfeit.
Money counterfeit?
Money counterfeit. He's doing counterfeit shit. They're just goes through like the whole process of Willem Dafoe like making all like the $20 bill prints. He's like some like...
Got you.
It seemed like he was like some kind of artist or something too.
Yeah, money counterfeit shit.
Man, I gotta rewatch that.
And definitely got to rewatch that.
William Peterson from Thief and from Manhunter.
Yes.
It's the cop again.
Classic cop. That guy. Such a dope movie. Also has a great car chase.
Yeah, it does have a crazy car chase like through like the LA River. And John Turturro has that part where he's
John Turturro.
Like the guy that gets busted for the counterfeit.
Oh my god. And of course, what a lot of people say is actually his masterpiece. Remake of Wages of Fear and adapted of the novel Sorcerer is so fucking
nice,
good.
Yeah.
And it was, it's one of those movies that, so it came out in 1977, same year Star Wars came out. And I think it's the same year Heaven's Gate came out. Michael Cimino's Heaven's Gate.
Okay. It's 2 years after Jaws and it has Roy Scheider in it.
Yeah. Roy Scheider was huge at the time, right? Because of Jaws. And he's in this huge movie, William Friedkin, Top of the World. And it flops. No one gives a fuck about it. Because the landscape is changing. People are watching fucking Star Wars. And it's also called Sorcerer, which is very misleading. It has nothing to do with sorcery.
Yeah, because it doesn't have anything to do with like sorcery, right?
No, not at all. It's a gritty movie about people transporting nitroglycerin through the jungle. And so,
yeah.
But it's a fucking masterpiece. And what, dude, when you see the bridge sequence on this movie, you're just going to be like, how the fuck did they do this? Like, how the fuck? It's insane. I don't think anybody could ever do anything like that. Maybe Christopher Nolan's the only one could like top something like that, but it's crazy. They're like driving a truck across like this rope bridge. It's insane, dude. Insane.
Yeah, I had heard some stories that Friedkin was kind of like rough with the actors sometimes and stuff like that. But all the like direct, like I don't know, people talking about him directly that worked with him all seemed to love him. So, I mean, he might have been kind of hard on the actors sometimes, but I think like they understood like what he was trying to get out of it.
Dude, if you get a chance, like listen to some interviews with William Friedkin, because he's fucking hilarious. He's like very like no nonsense.
Yeah.
And he's like a kind of like cynical, like New Yorker. He's hilarious, dude. Like people have like tried to grill him about his movies or like people say like the violence in your movies is too much. He's like, who said that? I didn't read that. Who the fuck would say that? You know what I mean? Like he's just like fucking he's sassy, dude. He's a fucking sassy pants. I've heard him talk shit about Exorcist 2. He's like, it's the worst piece of shit movie I've ever fucking seen in my life. It's like, damn, dude. Like, yo, chill. He's like, I turned it off after 30 minutes. Worst piece of shit I've ever seen in my life.
Jeez.
Like, damn, Friedkin.
Yeah, it definitely makes, like, very, like, raw, very, like, movies that you can, like, feel. Like, they feel, like, familiar, even, like, even though they're like so fantastical sometimes, like there's something about the way he does it that it makes it feel like you're like with him.
Absolutely. And I think he started in documentary before getting into narrative. Okay. And so he had this very documentary approach to doing it, which is really getting popular there in the 70s of like, let's shoot on location. Let's kind of like, you know, not block it so much, docu-style. But I feel like he just perfected it. I don't know. Because he did it in a way that was still aesthetically pleasing. It wasn't like some scrappy, like, handheld bullshit. Yeah. It was still like a, you know, a cinematic filmmaker's vision. But it had this grittiness to it. Yeah. I mean, the Safdie brothers call him, like, the master. Like, they're super influenced by him. And, like, yeah, he's the GOAT, man. He even made some crazy shit later in his life, like Killer Joe.
Yeah, I need to see some of his later Matthew stuff. Matthew McConaughey? Like Bug and Killer Joe. And,
I haven't seen Bug, but Killer Joe is great. Emil Hirsch?
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh,
he's the shit, man. That's my guy.
Nice, yeah. Well, yeah. We salute you, William Friedkin, and we'll miss you.
Rest in peace,
and,
man.
You gonna do the tribute thing?
Yeah. And here,
for
you is a special tribute that we made for William Friedkin.
Thank you.
Yeah, we dancing, dancing on the dead tonight. Yeah, we dancing, dancing on the dead. Yeah, we dancing, dancing on the dead tonight. Dancing.